Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Shipping Excellence Podcast. I'm Andrew Duncan, and today I have with me here a good friend, former co-worker, fellow entrepreneur, Drew Burdick, founder and CEO of StealthX.
Yeah, great to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. So, as most people know, Drew and I have co-authored the AI North Star Playbook, which is about defining your North Star and figuring out how to get started with AI. We've built several AI products now, launched them into the market, and we're sharing tips and tricks of how to get started, how to choose the problem to start, and then how to build them, tactical tips and tricks of the trade. Drew, tell us a little bit about the playbook.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, we launched about 3 or 4 weeks ago this playbook, and really the kind of thesis behind it is many, many companies and leaders are just diving in. They're picking a use case, they're building something, they're launching it, and that is a way to approach it. But, you know, really big on making sure you're solving the right problem and not just solving a problem. And so we go into a lot of detail around what are the, you know, tactics to help you refine the problem statement, prioritizing it, and then digging into actual execution. Like, what are the, you know, what's the game plan to go once you've defined the problem? So that's a little bit of the playbook. It comes from... Both Duncan and I have spent a lot of years like in the product development, product design universe, and AI is just a capability, really. And so it's taking lessons learned from building products and applying that in the context of AI. And so, you know, really excited with it. I think what's also cool is we're treating it like a product, so we're going to keep adding to it. And you know, I think already we've gotten some really great feedback to make it even better. So we'll likely have like, you know, version 2, 3, 4 coming out in the year, next year. But yeah.
Yeah, it's coming soon. I'm pretty excited about it because, like you said, most companies just dive in. And you can do that. You can spend a bunch of money, you know, learning what to focus on and then how to build it. But, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So do what other people have found is working. Yep. And so, you know, I've read a bunch of material in building AI products. I've built a bunch of them myself. And then, you know, so in the playbook, we basically lay it out. This is sort of like a roadmap on how to get started. So highly recommend you check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes for everyone who's interested in it. Sign up. And then, you know, feel free to ask questions about it. We love to talk about it. So, Drew, tell me, you know, what are you seeing companies do today now as they're getting started with AI?
So a lot of folks are stepping in with like the basic off-the-shelf stuff, right? They're easing in with Enterprise GPT or Copilot or something like that. I think a lot of folks are still hesitant to test and experiment. I think in addition to building your own sort of, you know, proprietary product or processes that's enabled by AI, there's a lot of just off-the-shelf stuff that people can test and learn from. I think, frankly, experimentation is the best way to learn what the capabilities are, and then you can then use that as an, you know, input into what might you do. I think a lot of folks, depending on kind of where they are in the stage of maturity, they're like scared of it, you know? Like, I think a lot of folks are, it's like the fear of the unknown is locking them up. You know, I find that pretty much everybody now has tried GPT or Gemini or Claude or something like that, but that's it. They haven't really played with anything else. And I've had a lot of folks come to me and they're like, what are you like trying? And I'm like, dude, I'm trying it every single day. Like this morning there was all the top 100 lists for 2024 coming out, and you know, I'm like looking through all the things to see if there's anything I haven't tried before. I was messaging with one of the guys on the team and was like, hey, let's try to do like a head-to-head with all of these code gen tools and just see like which one do we think actually is good, you know. But yeah, I think just in general, people are hesitant. But I really believe that we're entering a new era of work, and you should get comfortable with testing and learning these, you know, and experimenting with these things soon.
Yeah.
You know,
100%. I mean, I think I've seen, you know, a lot of times people will come and say, hey, we want to use AI here. And oftentimes, this not AI is not the capability that they need. It's logic or, you know, logic trees, decision trees. And so, you know, I find myself talking to people about what AI actually does, what it's capable of. And part of that's just education. It's like talking about, you know, what the terms mean and what it, you know, what can it do in your business today, given your current business workflows, right? And so I enjoy that because a lot of what it does now that we couldn't do with traditional software engineering in the past is anytime you need sort of like a reasoned decision, right? You need like where a human would make a decision in the business, you can now offload that to technology. AI is capable. That's what it does really well, right? It sort of adds this, you know, like machine capability of reasoning, right? And so that's super helpful. So we've built some really interesting things at Vertice. One of my favorite things to talk about is a tool that we built that would help companies who have to go through the RFP process for the government, right? So local, state, federal RFPs, right? Which is really time consuming. It's, you know, it's, you've got to read so much. You've got to sift through a bunch of RFPs that you now don't have to because AI can read them for you and they know what your company does and they can match. And so this tool that we built would, you know, create a company profile, right? Based on some information about your company, the website, previous RFPs that you've responded to and won. And then it would take a look, it would pull all the RFPs from the government websites and then create a profile about those RFPs and basically rank them against your company. And so now you just have a dashboard you log into and like you just look at the score, right? If it's 90, that's the one you want to read. So then you read it, you know, and then you can say, write me a response, and it can create the first draft of that response. And so it cuts out like hours and hours and hours of work that someone in the business was already doing. And so it was a really exciting tool, and it's, you know, people are paying for the solution now.
Yeah. I think there's this sort of theory of like three horizons. And right now the horizon that we're in is all around productivity and efficiency with AI and like stuff like that. Like those types of use cases are great, right? Like if you have a large organization spending a ton of time manually sifting through RFPs or whatever documents, that's a perfect way that AI can save you ton of time. We worked with an organization, I should say, previous place I worked, worked with a company that they were in the commercial real estate space, and they were specifically working with these loan documents. And loan documents are extremely long, very kind of hard to consume and understand, and lots of different data in different places. Like there's no kind of standard format. But anyway, we helped them abstract that data that they were manually pulling out of these documents, putting into their platform, and then serving that data up to their users. And we were able to build a proof of concept that we then built into the platform that did that all with AI, right? And it was like pretty powerful, and it saved their people a lot of time and energy that they could put towards other more valuable tasks, like getting more business, right?
Yeah, that's, I would say that's a pretty valuable task.
Yeah, right.
That's exciting. What, I guess my next question is, you've seen these businesses, some people trial and error and like, you know, just going out into the wilderness to figure it out on their own, which is how I learned it. I think that's the best way to learn, but I'm a big fan of learning from, you know, previous works. What are some of the success stories you've seen? You know, I mean, that's a perfect example, but what are some other success stories you've seen with people using AI?
Yeah, I think, so there's a couple of ones that come to mind. We did one, with a client where they had a desire to build like a redlining tool, essentially like streamline the process of redlining legal documents. And this was like a year and a half ago. So it was still like GPT was only, you know, less than a year had been out. And I think Claude was like still like first version. And we were using Kendra, and it was like very clunky, but it worked and it saved a lot of time, right? It was essentially like the job of a paralegal that is kind of like manually reviewing, doing like the first pass at legal review. And that was like tremendously valuable and was like really helpful to the client. I've also seen some stuff where companies are just, I mean, like the basics, like they have a contact center or call center sort of use cases where they are enabling their team to more easily respond to service requests, or perhaps like even just at the, you know, the first, the 80% of stuff that constantly they get, that's all just handled by AI. There's a guy here in Charlotte named Derek Wong. He runs an organization, or he has a co-founder. They run a company called Talk, T-A-A-L-K. And it's all like outbound calling. And it sounds like flawless.
Really? I was just asking someone about like the AI call bots and like how good they are and what you know.
Talk is pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So what are they using it for?
I mean, it's a lot of like sales and customer service type stuff. So different organizations, different industries. But yeah, it does like AI will do outbound calling. Yep. And it talks like a human, sounds like a human. It uses conversational language. And it's only getting better. Like, I remember hearing the first demo earlier this year, and I was stunned. Like, I was like, this really sounds legit. Like, it has the vocal pauses. It has the kind of inflections. I mean, anyway, you would not be able to tell, you know, frankly, that it was, you're talking to AI. And then, you know, so that's where there's a lot of these tools, and organizations are taking those things and leveraging it in their contact center. And I think it's, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch over the next year with tools like Gen AI, which generates video, right? And it actually, like, you'll take a video clip of yourself, you'll feed it to AI, it'll like generate videos
of you
talking, and you can like pick the voice, pick the style. It'll be really interesting to see how many more AI use cases come from these, like, you're feeding it videos of yourself and your voice, and then it's like making sales calls on your behalf, like, like, imagine, like, it's joining Teams calls. You don't have to go to meetings anymore. Like, we're like not that far away from world, right? But anyway, yeah. So like, use cases I'm seeing are, a lot of them are in that space, like customer service, contact center, sales. I have also seen some really interesting stuff with just like knowledge management. There's a company in Raleigh area called Prion, and they're doing this whole thing around knowledge cloud, which I think for enterprise is really powerful, right? Because if you've got all these disparate, disconnected systems, right? You have maybe your ERP, you have your CRM, you're using potentially Office 365. Right now, none of those tools talk to each other. And so if you're like, okay, I've got to go get the data from here, and then I got to get the data from there, and I got to put it all together and then feed it to an LLM and ask questions about it, which then you're, if it's not in a walled garden, it might be, you know, some InfoSec security stuff going on there. But Prion makes it where you can like tap, hook into all the APIs, and then you can have a conversation with your data from all these different sources, which is really cool. And so I think you're going to, that's already happening now. I think you're going to see that become much more prolific, and people are going to, you know, the fear is going to go down where they're going to be like, oh, okay, it's like protected and secure, and nothing, my data is not going to get stolen or whatever. And I think that those are like obvious ones in my mind.
Yeah, I think to your point, it'll become just ubiquitous with how people build tools, you know, or how they operate businesses in the future. Right now, there's hesitancy because, like, you know, compliance has to catch, like, the laws have to catch up, right? This is we're on the cutting edge of a new technology. It's very similar to when the internet revolution, when it came out, was just like, you know, it just took the world by storm, and business, the way businesses operated in the market changed because now they have a digital presence. They have, you know, like order fulfillment where previously, I guess they still had, you know, by phone, right? You have a mail order catalog, but you know, the speed at which they could deliver, or the speed at which the demand increased, was significant. And so I think that's what's happening here with AI, is people are going to have the ability to deliver a much higher quality of service or product to their end users. And so one of the things I've been keeping a close eye on is how this evolution is going to unfold for businesses who are early adopters to AI. And my bet is that the businesses today who are investing in AI to increase, you know, operational efficiency of their businesses and provide better customer service are laying the foundation to catapult ahead of other businesses who are sort of delaying that in the future, because they're going to have the capability of delivering at such a higher velocity and higher quality as they're building this in as a part of the framework of how they do business and what they offer to the market.
Agreed. I think you're familiar with the concept of value stream mapping?
I'm not.
It's basically like, I'm going to overly simplify. It's like you're mapping how value flows through your organization to customers, essentially.
Yeah.
And I think there's like a lot of need, going back to the North Star playbook piece that we were talking about. A lot of organizations need to like map out what's that value stream or, you know, value chain. Like, how does value move from here to there? And along that path, finding like, here's a place where AI could add value or like streamline or improve or optimize. Here's a place. You pick like the top four or five, right, that are least effort, highest impact along that value chain. And I think that's where you're going to see a ton of gain. Similar concept is like journey mapping. So you're mapping out your customer's journey and, you know, and or your employee's journey and saying like, where are the moments that matter in that journey and how do we make it better with AI? I think, you know, I know the podcast is called Shipping Excellence. And if you think about like, do the mapping of like how you deliver your digital product, how you ship products to your customers, digital products, and you can find throughout that whole journey where areas to make things better, more efficient, more effective. Like, for example, you know, let's say in the process of defining product requirements, creating PRD, taking that inputs and putting it into Jira or in some sort of project management tool, that can all be optimized, and on, frankly, like 50% of it could be done by AI today. Then you get now you're prototyping and mocking stuff up in Figma or whatever, you're wireframing things like AI, like Figma is learning right now. They're feeding all the designs, unless you opt out, into their model to learn, and basically you're going to be able to generate designs without having to like move pixels around. And then you talk about code, right? And like you can use GitHub Copilot, Code Whisperer. There's like Lovables out there now, V0,
Cursor,
Replit, all these tools that you can use to like think of as like junior developer, junior engineer, right? So like that whole, you know, stream of doing work to get to shipped excellence, you can plug AI in all of those places.
Yes, it's like significantly increases the efficiency of building and shipping software, exactly. Whether they're tools or products or, yep, you know, for whatever, you know, software is eating the world, right? So for whatever reason you need software, yep. I'm exceptional at shipping software. I have no design ability whatsoever. So maybe we'll get to a point, you know, with Figma adopting AI where I can tell it a few things and it can design something for me. But, you know, I think we're pretty far away from, there's this worry that software engineers' jobs are going away because AI can automate most of it. I think we're pretty far away from, you know, all the jobs going away. I think there's still human in the loop is a big concept in AI. So I think there's still a world for the next few years at a minimum where you still need like highly capable technical people to help map the business problem to the software solution.
Yep.
I don't think AI can quite do that yet, but it can write code, it can write architecture. But like the, you know, best way to solve the business problem and, to your point, provide value along the value chain, I think is still a human process. But, you know, that maybe that's only two or three more years because the technology is evolving so rapidly. But I am curious to see how that problem is solved, because I can't fathom it right now.
I think so. I feel like people who have been designing, building, shipping products, digital products for their careers, will need to evolve. And I think the way that I would recommend that they evolve is to think about that whole value stream, right? Start thinking more strategically, right? Because right now, like, all that work is becoming commoditized by AI. It already is a commodity, right? Like, it's being when it started going offshore and started, you know, being a price war, commodity. So I think it's going to be really critical that everybody starts to think about it as, I need to understand the bigger picture. How does what I do fit into that, you know, and then how can I kind of look upstream and downstream and make things more valuable for the customer? And that's probably gonna put people in some uncomfortable positions, right? Because frankly, like we talk about, developers haven't really had to do that their careers. They've just had to like, I just do the thing. I build the requirements as they are stated in ASDO or Jira or whatever, and then I go home and I collect my check and I feel great. And it's like, I don't think that's going to work anymore. But I think the people who recognize that now and start to test and learn, experiment with the tools, incorporate that into their workflows, so they're able to create more value, right? They have like increased their capacity, and they look at like the whole value stream and say, what are things that I can do? What are the skills that I have that I can bring up here and down here that isn't just coding? You know what I mean?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's to your point, it's how do I make the business better, right? That's sort of like just the generic overall, you know, question of like, you know, being a good employee, but you know, but it is like, you have to be, I think you said this at some other time we were talking, of like the generalists are the ones, like the strategic generalists are the ones who are going to excel in this transformation. And I wrote an article maybe a couple months ago comparing this like transformation of AI similar to the impact that the Industrial Revolution had. It's going to be massive over the next, you know, it's slow, right? Like, we're not going to see massive layoffs in the next 6 months or a year, but like over time, the economy, what we value in the economy and the workforce from knowledge workers is shifting. And I agree. I think one of the best ways to like survive that or ride that wave is to immerse yourself in domain. So whatever business you're working for, learn it, learn how the business operates and why it operates the way it does and what problems it's solving for their customers, right? Because then you kind of understand the value that it brings to the market, right? So understanding that, because that puts you in a mindset to start brainstorming and thinking about ways that you can improve that. And so, you know, I was talking to Chris Janes recently, and he mentioned the book Range, which I just started reading, and I love it. It's exceptional. Yeah. I know. You've read it?
Yeah.
It's so good. It's blowing my mind. But like, one of the things that I think we've adopted as a society is the 10,000-hour rule, and that is, you know, early in your life, or if you spend 10,000 hours practicing any skill, you'll be better than the majority of the humans on the earth at that skill. And it talks about like people who become elite in whatever they're doing. So whether it's music or sports or business, are the people who don't specialize earlier in their life. They participate in a bunch of different you know, sports or musical instruments or whatever it is that they're learning. And they don't start specializing until later in life. And what that gives them is the dynamic ability to solve problems they've never seen before, right? Because they've learned a bunch of different skills that they can bring together when they're solving a new problem. And so I think that that applies here, right? As we're weathering this transformation in AI, is that you've got to be dynamic. You got to be able to learn quickly and adjust and adapt and, you know, so dive in.
Yeah. Well, it's, I think like the future favors those who are not afraid, right? Like I like to say, like, don't play scared.
That's right. Play to win.
Yeah, right. And I think a lot of people are playing scared right now. And I think, you know, for folks who are in a leadership role, right, it can be scary because you're like, well, I don't know what this means. I don't know, you know. And then if you're more of like boots on the ground, you know, tactical, doing the thing, it could feel a little scary because you're like, well, what if my job gets taken by this or that or whatever? But I see it as a tremendous opportunity. And frankly, this is like the golden age. Like, it won't be like this for very long, right? And so I think for those who are willing to kind of grab a hold of it and make something out of it, like, go for it.
You know? Do it now. Don't wait. There's no reason to wait.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's, like, some practical examples. I quit my job 6 months ago, and I launched a podcast, launched a newsletter. I've been taking all kinds of meetings. Like, we've got projects. And better believe, like, only reason I can do any and all of that is because I'm augmenting everywhere I can with AI. And like,
you have to.
I mean, like, I was reading something, I forgot who wrote this, but it was like, we will see the first like $1 trillion solo company, like solopreneur company, in the next like 10 years.
Unicorn. I heard this too. I heard it was the first unicorn from a solopreneur.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, you think about it, like, that seems wild, but really, not like, if you've got AI agents that are taking care of, like, that's, you know, like I said, the whole value stream, and all along that journey, all along the steps, like, you've got AI agent doing this, AI agent doing this, and you've got essentially like a series of agents that are orchestrating all the different pieces, and you're just like making sure that everything continues, like, it's going to be a totally different world, right? Yeah. And I think that, like, you're going to see like these smaller, much, much smaller companies just like punch these big enterprises in the mouth.
Yes.
And they're not going to like it, but it's because these big enterprises are playing scared. Like, they're playing defensively around like, protect what we've got versus like, take the, you know, seize the moment and take advantage of what we have in front of us. Right. So
I have a good buddy. He, he and his wife run a company, and it's in the education space. And he built AI workflows within their. They have a digital product, and it's a. It helps nurses get into nursing school, pass their T's exam, right? And he built an AI product, a mobile app, a web app. You know, they've got some online courses, and they have done so well because, like, the way they've. His wife is. She's a PhD, and she's exceptional at teaching. And they've designed this thing in such a way that it helps people really grasp the concepts so that they can pass their T's exam. And they're being courted by the biggest players in the teaching industry for this particular field because they have been wildly successful at launching this new product. And they can't move as fast. The big companies can't move as fast because, to your point, they're playing defense. They don't know how. When you're big, there's a lot of bureaucracy and red tape that you have to, there's politics. Like, for the reasons that big companies can't move fast, they can't move fast. And they're just two people. Well, actually, I think they have a few more people on staff now, but they, you know, have done very well. And, like, I love, that's like in my backyard, a real world example of where someone's applied AI to a real world problem and are helping people, like, change their lives. These are people who are going to school to become nurses, right? And so that's impactful.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really cool.
Agreed. 100%. Yeah, I've got a couple of stories like that too. And I was actually, there's this guy, Greg Eisenberg. I've mentioned him on my podcast a couple of times. He has great thought leadership. He's like an advisor to TikTok and Reddit, and he's like sold a bunch of companies. Anyway, one of the things he was talking about recently was like these solopreneur companies that have been started over the weekend, right, using AI tools to make an AI-powered product that they launch in the market, and they're generating, you know, 10, 50, 100 K, you know, in monthly revenue for this just like person who's doing it side of desk or, you know, in their free time. Like the one you mentioned, there was a guy that he actually on his podcast, this other guest was like, oh, somebody should go out there and use AI to generate SVGs and then make a library out of it and then like give access to it. And like one of their listeners did that in a like weekend.
That's awesome.
And is now making all his money because it's literally like they use GPT to generate like black and white PNGs. They take that and then they put it in, I forget the other tool. There's like some vectorizing tool and they like scale it up and turn it into vector. And then they're just like, they have this whole sort of automation where it's generating these things, putting in a library, and then he's got like a Shopify website, basically. Yep. It's like, and he gives a bunch of like stuff for free. And then if you want the premium stuff, you pay like $4 a month or whatever. And boom.
Business.
Business. Making money, right? And I love seeing these stories because there's so many more people that are starting to, they take their knowledge of an industry or their understanding of the consumer or problem or whatever, and then they're essentially just finding this like niche opportunity to make a product, and they don't need a whole team of engineers and product people and designers and researchers and strategists, which makes a whole lot of people pissed off, right? Because a lot of people are like, it's not, you gotta do the thing, right? Like, you have to follow the rules, and you're like, there are no rules.
There's no
like,
rules. The world is the world. We were talking about this before. I like to operate, the world is gray. Right. Like it is, you navigate it. We live in a capitalist society, right? You navigate it the best you can and you find the opportunity. And that's what people are doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's magical, right? Like it's, it remains America being the land of opportunity because here we are on the verge of another just sort of like boom where people can in their garage, you know, like back in the 80s and 90s, build a business and build a unicorn. Right?
Yeah.
And
so that's a good metaphor. Like it's kind of, back when Microsoft and Apple and like personal computing started to become a thing, before that, it was like only reserved to the elites who had the capital to build these, you know, building size computers. And they made it where it was democratized, where anyone could access it, right, in the comfort of their home. And it's the same thing like when the internet came on, it democratized things. And this is just another wave of democratization. Right. Which I think, you know, there's a case to be made for as things get easier, the barrier to entry gets lower. Mm-hmm. It will start to become like really noisy.
Yep.
And that's, you know, one of my sort of things that I say is differentiated experiences are what will matter now more than ever. Right. It's not enough just to like have something be fast, easy and cheap. You've got to have something that separates you from others. And I think that's where build excellent products and make something that people actually want and is like unique. It's not just like, oh, look at this generic
right, yeah.
thing that anyone can make anywhere, right? Like, so I think that's another, in terms of like what shipping, in my opinion, what shipping excellence looks like in the future is going to be differentiated, unique experiences, things that make people feel something, not just like it works.
Yeah, yeah. Not just like the chatbot that you slap on.
Yeah, until, right.
You know, like it's
got
to
call it
a day, right? Like, yeah. I agree. I think this is, you know, to draw on past experience and the evolution of computing is when the internet became big and we went from, you know, web 1.0 to web 2.0 and, you know, we had like, you know, dynamic websites and people could write content and publish it out with blogs. You know, everyone was writing a blog and like you said, there was a bunch of noise and the ones that stuck out were the ones that were of quality, right? Mm-hmm. Like they were writing about things that people really cared about, that they had deep interest in.
Yep.
And it's the same thing now when you're building your product, when you don't just slap an AI sticker on it and say it's AI powered, right? It has to, like, you know, AI is good at some things, it's not good at other things. So if you're building a product with a, you know, with a specific problem in mind that you're solving, and you happen to be able to use AI to do that, which it unlocks a lot of capabilities, that's what's going to stick. That's what's, you know,
yeah.
after we get through this rush of noise, that's what's going to stay around for the long haul. And like, that's what, I mean, this is why I like working with you, is that's what you do. You're able to like, you're able to take whatever, like this nebulous problem space and whatever business you're working with and like really distill it down into the thing that a company should focus on that will move the needle for what they're trying to do. And like, that is the kind of skill that's going to weather this too. And that's what companies really need to do to get ahead.
Agreed. I think the, you know, going back to the playbook and part of what we kind of talk about there is in order to design something that is differentiated, that people do want and, you know, need, you have to know what they care about. What are their problems? What are they struggling with? And that's, you know, a big part of what I, you know, believe in and what I do is, understanding customers, understanding employees, you know, implicitly and being able to take those insights and turn them into solutions. Like, okay, we learned that customers do this or don't do that or like this or don't like that. We've, you know, through a qualitative and quantitative, you know, analysis, we've been able to kind of figure out, hey, there's an opportunity here, right? And you're probably going to find, especially with, you know, through the lens of AI, you're like, man, there's like unlimited opportunities. There's so much stuff you could do. But that's really where you have to kind of be discerning and prioritize and say, all right, what's going to move the needle for the business and for the customer? And, you know, it might not be the thing that you, I don't know, it might not be the shiny object. I think a lot of folks get distracted with like, mm-hmm. we're going to go do this thing. And it's like, actually, you know, your customer, like this thing sucks really hard. So you should probably fix that. And it's like, probably not this cool thing that you can, you know, go in your quarterly earnings, say, oh, we have a AI, whatever, right? And it's like, boost your stock price a little bit. Like, your customer's like, we don't care about that. I want this thing. Like, yep. Why is this so bad?
It doesn't work.
Yeah,
it doesn't,
right.
Or does it work well, or it's complicated, and I don't know how to use it. I don't get the value you intended for me to get out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know?
Yeah.
So something that's been buzzing around that's pretty big now is this concept of agentic workflows. And this is something you guys can find in the playbook. We've got like a dictionary of terms, a glossary of terms, to help familiarize you with, you know, the terms that are flying around in the office. And I like that Anthropic just released a really interesting article that talks about like what an agent actually is. And, you know, even when I was building AIs, like, you know, I'm building AI capabilities and there's certain these patterns that I follow that I know apply to specific, you know, scenarios. But like my understanding, and I think what Anthropic has just released, is that an agent is a sort of an autonomous AI implementation that you can turn it on, give it a problem, say go, and it goes and figures out dynamically how to solve the problem. Whereas using AI embedded into your business flow or your product is not necessarily an agent. It's not an agent. It's not autonomous workflow, right? So I think of that. This is something I found really interesting as people are trying to navigate whether they need an agent or how do you, you know, what does it even mean to have an agent and build that into my business? Kind of back to the talk and the call bots is they're autonomous. They can go do the thing with no direction.
But they have constraints. I think that's the key that a lot of folks don't realize is like you're putting guardrails. So you're like, you know, it's almost like employees,
yep.
right? You're like, your job is this. And you stay in these lanes and you like do the job and here's what success looks like, right?
Yes.
And you kind of give them like very specific, like here's kind of role responsibilities, here's what you're doing, here's how you're doing it. In this case with AI, you're giving it like, you're kind of like prompting it, right? You're like, here's a set of prompts that you follow. And then you're like, then you run it autonomously and it's just like doing the thing.
Yes.
But what's really cool with agents and the agentic kind of approach is you can sort of have these series of agents that are like, this one, it's like an employee. It's like, this one only does this. Like this one is extracting this type of information from this source, structuring in this way and putting it in this place. And then the next one's like, this one is now taking that and it's analyzing it through this lens and changing it and modifying it, whatever, and putting it over here. Now this one is taking that. It's like this sort of like, in a weird way, like an assembly line.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Where it's like moving things, but you end up getting better results, I think, when you do it that way, because you're constraining how the agent is functioning instead of just being like, figure it out.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
'Cause then you get a lot of that weird, like where it's like, you know,
like hallucinations.
Yeah. It's like coming up with stuff that makes no sense. And you're like, oh, this is not quite what I was looking for. So yeah, I think agents are the way we're going to be going.
Yes.
And what would be really crazy is when you start to combine like agents with robotics,
mm-hmm.
right? So like the Tesla just had their thing with Optimus, right? And that was crazy.
Yeah.
And you know, they've got the autonomous vehicles and everything that's coming out, like the, I think they call it Robovan. You know, Elon,
yes.
Say it in a funny way, Robovan. But like you start combining like agents with robotics, it's gonna be really fascinating. And that's already happening
it's
now.
It's already happening. Yeah.
But like you're gonna start to see it in more of the consumer space. Like it's primarily commercial right now. Like a lot of the, for example, like, you know, fulfillment centers for Amazon, right? There's a ton of robotics. There's actually, I saw the metric. It was like the number of robots per person is like hundreds per night.
Oh, I didn't know
like
this
you have, yeah, like you, it's mostly robots. And then they have like a control room with like people, but it's mostly like robots flying around and moving stuff. And so imagine if you like take those, which have like more like algorithmic type of a thing, but like you start to make it like an agent where you're like, they can actually, within these guardrails, they can solve problems on the fly versus like getting stuck and being like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know.
Like the Roomba.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, dude, I was just going to say that. Yeah. We have a Roomba and it's like smarter than the normal Roomba.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty stupid. So like if it gets stuck, like it accidentally sucks in like a, you know, cord or something, it'll just freeze and die. Or it'll just keep trying to pull on it. But like imagine if that, you know, with an agent that was powering it, it could just be like, it could solve the problem.
Yeah, it could identify it and then solve it.
Yeah, like I have, and it could even if it doesn't have like arms, it can notify another robot that then comes over and like pulls it out and then it keeps going, right?
Or like I like to think that it could then use, it knows the sock is stuck, right? And maybe it still's got a little mobility. It could use the corner of a chair
to
pull the sock out and keep it, you know, like.
Like it can figure out a way to solve the problem. And it doesn't, it's not like a, if this then that, like logic based thing.
Right.
It's a like dynamic, okay, this is a weird situation. Like the sock is stuck in this one part of my motor and I've never had this happen before. How am I gonna figure this out?
Yep.
But you're constraining it where you're like, don't break things, like don't it's like the
don't chase the cat.
yeah. Like you've probably seen iRobot, right?
Yeah.
And like they have their like these are the rules, right? That they like you can't kill.
Like the three laws or
the laws of robotics, like those are the kinds of things like it feels like science fiction, but it's like that.
But that's what's happening.
That's where we are, you know, in the world. It's crazy.
The best example that I have seen of like a fully autonomous agentic workflow is there's a company who is basically trying to automate the SDLC, like from the implementation phase. And so they've got like a QA agent, they've got a DevOps agent, they've got engineers, you know, they've got architect agents, they've got a like a project manager agent, right? Yeah. That's like writing tickets and JIRA and acceptance criteria. And, you know, I saw a demo of this and they went as far as to like write the code files that needed to change to implement any particular ticket and estimate the effort to implement it, right? And I thought that was pretty slick and pretty impressive of, like, here's a real-world implementation where people are using agents where they're still human in the loop. You still got to have some guard, you know. But, you know, for the most part, mostly autonomous.
I think I had this thought the other day. You probably use, like, Fiverr or Upwork,
I've
right?
Used it, yeah.
So, like, if, you know, if you go to Fiverr and Upwork today, you're getting like a very specific person who does a very specific task for a very specific amount of money, right?
Yep.
I think that we're going to see very quickly, there's going to be like a Fiverr, but it's all AI.
Oh, yeah.
Like you're going to have a bunch of AI agents where like this is kind of a funny, I was curious. So I paid like $20 to some dude in like Bangladesh or something. Yeah. And I was like, hey, you know, he's like a YouTube expert. I was like, hey, make a thumbnail. Here's some constraints. Here's some assets. Like figure it out. Just to see like what would come back. Cause I was just curious. And the, like I submitted it and I was like, I bet there's probably going to be like something in maybe even Fiverr will do this where it's like you have a YouTube thumbnail agent,
yeah,
and you're like here, and then it comes back and gives you like here's 15, and it'll be like instant,
yeah
versus like I have to wait for this
24
person
on 48 the, hours yeah
right. So I think you're gonna have the gig economy is about to get blown up too,
yep,
where you've got anything that's done digitally, right, you're gonna just have like agents,
yep,
and you're gonna have people who are basically building almost like a library of agents,
yep,
that they're like, here, we have the best agents for insert whatever, you know, here. Or it's like, we're a marketplace of agents and you're going to basically just pay like a monthly subscription. And then you have access to essentially all these employees that are virtual and you're not going to have to like, Fiverr will get destroyed. Upwork will get blown up. Like yep. those things will, and those people.
Or their model will change, or they'll, yeah. you know, or they'll they will do, sell the agents themselves.
Yeah. Or they'll sell it to the people who are right. Like, who are on Fiverr. So it's like Fiverr, if my income was based off of Fiverr, I'd be making an AI agent
right
to redo what I do and do more, it at a higher volume, right?
Yeah, sell.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you got to build that cushion because like I think it's a fair bet to say that it's coming, right? Yeah. Like, so you should probably be building some protection against that. So there's a couple different architectures that I wanted to talk a little bit about, just from a technical standpoint, that's in the playbook that will help people like sort of wrap their brain around like how they build agents or workflows. Cause you know, agents and then augmentation / workflows are slightly different when you're building AI capabilities in your products, or, you know, within your business. And there's simple augmentation, which is, you know, you've got an LLM, you've got some data, some information, it's a RAG application, right? And so you pull it out, you process it with the LLM, or maybe it's from an external source, and then you store it, right, for retrieval, maybe for UI or decision making, you know, later, right? And that's like the simplest way to get started with any kind of AI capability. And I think whenever you're starting, whenever you're starting, always start with the simplest use case and then build out the complexity as the use cases, you know, allow or as you need it, right? And so like the next evolution of that is you have a prompt chaining. So you have an AI that, you know, maybe you get some external data or internal data from your own data store and you process it, and then the output of that processing goes into the next prompt, and then you process that and so forth and so on, so you get the outcome that you're looking for. And then you can get a little more complex and start doing things like workflows and parallelization. So, you know, like you got some input into an agent, and that workflow, that agent is a sort of a workflow orchestrator, and it'll call multiple other LLMs to, you know, process data or make decisions. And then, you know, there's combinations of that. So like maybe that workflow orchestrator is parallel processing. Maybe it's, you know, parallel and chaining, and you can kind of make more and more complex. And these are like some patterns that you can use that to basically decompose the problems mm-hmm. that you're trying to solve with your AI. And so that's in the playbook too for anyone who's interested in it. That'll sort of help you wrap your mind around how to build these. And then you have agents, which we just kind of covered in detail. So
I think something that's really interesting I'll throw out there is like we're in the period of time, I've been calling it like the 64 meg era of AI, right? Which is like we're quickly 128, 256, 512. Like it's like we're accelerating faster and faster. And if you remember 10 years ago, if you wanted to go buy
Moore's Law, right? Like
I think that's right.
One of those, yeah.
But like we're going to quickly get to a point where none of this stuff actually matters. Like AI will figure out that too.
Yeah.
Like you won't have to know the structures and the models. It'll be basically like, this is what I'm trying to do. And it'll figure out like how to solve that problem based on whatever you are trying to do. And like, I think there's also, I really believe that in the near future, you'll just be able to talk to like Siri.
Yeah.
And, you know, it and say, here's what I need and here's what I what it needs to do. And it'll just generate interface for you, right?
Yep.
In whatever modality and whatever channel. And like when you're done with it, you just like Minority Report, you just wipe it away.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You don't have to actually like you won't have anybody building interface. It'll just be built for you. And it'll behind the scenes, it'll be like figuring out how do I need to solve. It'll reason through like, do I need to use this pattern, that pattern, whatever. The patterns will become like not as important. It'll become more about you giving the right inputs so that it knows what you're really trying to solve. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's going to be really fascinating.
How long do you think we are from, you know, sort of that like hands off? It's almost just like AGI, I guess, at that point.
Right.
How like what's your prediction?
I mean, hard to say. Like we're going so fast, but if you think about like every wave of like this that we've had, there's typically like 5 to 10 year time horizon because like remember when people were adjusting to using the internet, it wasn't until like early 2000s that people started to really adopt it.
Yeah.
And like same thing with like smartphones. Like when the iPhone first came out in 2007, like I remember I only knew a handful of people that had an iPhone when it first launched. And then it was like, it wasn't until probably 2015 where it was like, so everybody had a smartphone.
Ubiquitous at that point, right?
Yeah. But like that, like, I think there's going to be, it's going to be 5 to 10 years before this stuff really like starts to cement in as like, this is, you know, capable and this is normal and whatever. I also think it'll take that long for just the society to adjust. Like now everybody has a smartphone in their pocket. That was weird before. Like my grandfather, who's like in his like late 80s, he can like message me on Facebook. You know what I mean? But like, and he didn't know how to use a phone.
That's
10 years ago.
My grandparents can't do that.
Yeah. But you know, point being like, I think it's 5 to 10 years is probably how long it takes to bake.
Yeah.
And for people to kind of accept and embrace it. So.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think, because it's complex. People have to adopt it. The technology has to get there. We got to regulate it. Like there's, you know, there's a number of hurdles to jump through. Well, I appreciate you. It was awesome chat, man. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, likewise.
Always enjoy talking with you. Again, Drew's founder, CEO of StealthX. And for anyone who's interested, check the show notes for the playbook. And I'll put a link to the book Range that I was talking about a little bit earlier as well. Anyways, it was a pleasure having you, man. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.